genuine question now.
Go ahead.
When was the last time you experienced decent, not even like exceptional, just decent customer service?
Oh, long time ago.
I mean, there's no secret formula for it. Yet, what we do know is that most companies seem to be pretty bad at it. But not you, my friend. Not you, listener. Oh, no. You can create an amazing customer service experience when you use the brand new Service Hub from HubSpot.
Yep, this all-new Service Hub from HubSpot brings customer service and support together in one simple but powerful platform so you can deliver the best experience possible. And of course, it's powered by AI, not Al, AI, meaning your team can automate those tedious tickets from people who've clearly not read your frequently asked questions. Pain in the backside, aren't they? Oh, and by the way, organizations using HubSpot Service Hub are resolving tickets 13 times faster, helping them to close 42% more tickets per day. That means increasing retention by more than 80%. Thank you, people at HubSpot who did the maths on that one, because I wouldn't be able to.
I love a bit of data. Did you also know, Al, that it consolidates your entire internal knowledge base into one place? So no matter who is working on support, they'll have the answers at their fingertips.
I did know that because I wrote that for you.
Well, there you have it. Stand out from the crowd and migrate to HubSpot Service Hub today.
Visit HubSpot.com/service and learn how this all-new solution can help you deliver for your customers.
Hello and welcome to the Truth, Lies and Work podcast brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. They are the audio destination for business professionals. My name is Leanne. I'm a business psychologist.
My name is Al. I'm a business owner.
And we are here to help you simplify the science, the psychology of work.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome, welcome. If this is your first time listening on a Tuesday, I know if you've heard this before, just bear with me for 30 seconds. First time listening on a Tuesday, this is a brand new episode style which we do on a Tuesday, which is a little bit more informal than the Thursday. Thursday, very, very important. Very important guests on there. But on a Tuesday, it's a little bit more laid back. It's just me and the lovely Lee. You know she's a business psychologist. You also probably know she's my wife, but also business partner. Mm-hmm. We live in Bosnia. We have a dog.
I'm like an all-in-one, aren't I?
You are. You're just a whole package. So if you like the interviews, then you need to come back on a Thursday. If you like just chats, then Tuesday will do for you.
Yes, on today's episode of This Week in Work, working title. There's a lot of working titles on the Tuesday.
It's only episode 4 of Tuesday, yeah. This Tuesday style.
Yeah, back off. It's open the episode 4.
Yeah. Sit down.
Sit down, Jeff. I've not talked about Jeff for a while, have we?
Jeff was our recurring character for a little while, who was a pain in our asses, mm-hmm. because he was always asking these questions. He was the annoying listener who'd write in and go, excuse me, I noticed that you didn't quite do this thing right and you didn't mention that, even though you said you wouldn't mention it. Poor Jeff.
Sit down, Jeff.
Anyway.
All feedback welcome. On today's episode of This Week in Work, can you give too much freedom to your team? That is a question we'll be asking and hopefully answering. We'll also be talking about Gen Z work trends and perhaps how they might not be quite as new as they or we think. And layoffs, what is the risk and what can you do to protect yourself?
We also have highlights from last week's episode with Maradona's agent and the ever popular weekly workplace surgery with super psychologist Leanne. So let's kick off with your favourite time of the week, Lee.
It's time for the news roundup. Cue the jingle. What have you got, Al?
An article in Inc. magazine this week asked the question, if micromanaging is bad, can you go too far the other way? What was interesting in this article, and I will link to it in the show notes, Monster, not Inc., monster.com, isn't it? The jobs board, yeah.
Yep.
They did a poll where it found that 73% said micromanaging was the biggest workplace red flag, and 46% of people would consider leaving because of it. So the answer seems to be, obviously, to someone as simple as me, give more freedom to your teams, but that can actually backfire. Firstly, Inc. reckons this could demonstrate that you just don't care. Maybe it will look like the manager only cares about their own projects or tasks. And secondly, by just letting you get on with stuff, the manager can lose the opportunity to get the feedback. Another survey said that 96% of all employees wanted to get feedback. And as we learned from Dave Klein in episode 87, who's done over 1,000 one-to-one check-ins, one-to-one meetings, regular contact, even if it is just a how are you getting on, is imperative. And finally, there is a risk that your good work won't be recognized. This makes sense because micromanagement will pick up on your mistakes, but it also gives you an opportunity for a manager to catch you doing something right. Now, Deloitte found that performance, engagement, and productivity is 14% better on average when managers recognize the work their employees do. The other downside of a manager that leaves you alone is that you may not have the relationship, which means that they may not back you up when you actually need it. If a manager doesn't know or care much about you, then do you think they'll really go to battle for you? So like everything, it's a balance, but the opposite of micromanaging doesn't seem to be unlimited freedom, Lee.
Yeah, I think there's this myth that micromanagement means a lot of time spent managing people, and not micromanagement means less time managing people. And actually, you'll probably spend as much time, if not more time, managing your people as a leader that steps back and doesn't micromanage, because it needs relationship building and trust building and, as you said, feedback and all that kind of stuff. So giving people freedom doesn't mean not managing them. It just means managing them more effectively, which is why you should train your managers.
We're going to get Leanne a t-shirt with train your managers on it.
We should do merch. I would like train your managers. Elon Musk can get in the bin.
Mm-hmm.
And Myers-Briggs is bullsh.
Yes. What you seen, Lee?
Well, changing the mood slightly, layoffs. We see a lot about it. There have been tens of thousands in the tech industry. And given the continued economic situation, we could be headed for more. We saw the UK and Japan go into recession earlier this year, and it does look like the USA may be next. According to an article in the Business Insider featuring Danielle DiMartino Booth, who is Chief Strategic Officer and Market Forecaster at Quill Intelligence Research, the latest data shows that unemployment is creeping up. In April 2023, the unemployment rate was about 3.4% in the US, and that has gone up to 3.8% this year, which doesn't sound like much of an increase. But as Danielle explained, just an uptick of 0.35% is a bad sign. And if it stays there for a few months, well, that's actually what happened at the start of the financial crisis in 2008. And we all remember how that turned out. In fact, the article goes on to predict that layoffs could hit 370,000 by the end of April, numbers that we haven't seen since 2009. So yes, layoffs do look like they're also picking up speed as well. Data shows that layoffs and firings have jumped nearly 10% in the USA over the last year. And Danielle Booth thinks that this could be just the beginning, especially as companies start to share how they're doing financially. It's a similar picture in the UK. Unemployment has jumped up to 4.2%. That was February this year. And we've seen some significant layoffs in retail and gaming industries recently. It is a tough time out there. So this might raise a question. Well, what should I do to reduce the risk of being made redundant? And what do I do if I am made redundant? Getting yourself prepared in a practical sense is always a good move. Update that resume, your LinkedIn, keep building and nurturing your network, keep an eye on the jobs boards, all those career cushioning activities that are really important right now. If you have been made redundant, or if you do know it's coming, I would recommend you do focus on the psychological impacts first, including building your understanding of what it is normal to feel and experience during what is a workplace trauma. To help with that, I would suggest going back to episode 13, how to support your team through redundancy using lessons from the Twitter layoffs. I also appeared on another podcast this week called We Are Human Leaders, where we discussed layoffs at length, including the practical steps you can be taking if you've recently been made redundant.
And here's a short clip of Leanne on said podcast.
Interestingly, I've been through a redundancy process myself within an organization, and fortunately was one of the employees at the time who kept my job. But I guess the experience of just knowing that it was coming and not knowing some of the thought process around what jobs would be retrenched and why.
The first thing I think as a business leader, if you've not been in this situation before, is just draw on your leadership skills, your executive skills that you have anyway. This is essentially a very big organizational change.
Mm.
And any organizational change, yep, whether it be a digital transformation or layoffs, requires a very robust change management process. It can't be haphazard. It can't be, we'll see how we go. It needs to be planned out really, really carefully, from the communications to the what do you do once you've made those redundancies and you're left with the people that remain and moving forward. So I think that's one mistake that organizations don't make. They don't have that change management process, thought out, wraparound care to help before they start to execute the layoffs. I think the second mistake people make is they'll try and go, oh, we'll just make a few people redundant now and maybe that will fix a profitability problem and we'll make a few more people redundant in a few weeks' time. The trouble with that slow approach is that it breeds ambiguity. It puts us all in our threat state for longer than we should be. That's when we turn on each other, including our colleagues, and this infighting start.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it fast. And it's brutal. And we see these organizations, you know, like Meta and Amazon and Google, who are laying off tens of thousands of people at once, which sounds horrific. But actually, it's the kindest way to do it because the quicker that process can be executed, identified, communicating who is going to sadly leave the business, supporting them through that process, supporting the people who remain through that process, and then being able to move forward as the organization that you then are. That is the most effective way you can protect culture, protect well-being, protect your employer brand. It's still going to be insanely disruptive. I'll leave a link in the show notes. And don't forget, we offer pro bono coaching for people who have recently lost their jobs. Spaces are limited, so please get in touch quickly. You'll find a link to book a direct meeting with me in the show notes. Anything else to add, Al?
Yep, it's those pesky Gen Zers again, thinking they're first to come up with things. I mean, of course they're just, because every generation thinks they've invented something new, and the older generation smile quietly as it's exactly the same as what they were doing years and years ago. I remember back in the 90s when I was growing up being horrified that my mother could sing along to this new stuff on the radio, and of course they were just covers from the 60s. So the pattern continues as Gen Z on TikTok are now using all kinds of new phrases that they think are new, but actually are as old as time itself. And the pattern continues as Gen Z are now using all kinds of phrases on TikTok, which they think are new. Sadly, they're not.
Like what?
Well, there's a term called loud laborers, which was first popularized by a guy called Andre Spicer. We have some names on this podcast. He's an organizational behavior professor and dean of Bayes Business School. And the idea is that there are some colleagues who spend their day self-promoting and telling everyone how amazing they are and how much work they've done. And what they found was the majority of this person's colleagues would rather quit then confront this person. Clearly not a great situation for any manager.
So loud laborers was first made popular by an academic, and now Gen Z are picking that up as if they just made it up.
Yes, but but more so.
We've all done that.
Well, I was just about to say, because if you go back 25 years, 35 years, in fact, there's a great movie film called Office Space, and it's 25 years old this year, I think. And there's a character in there who wants everyone to know how important and hardworking they are. I can't remember what the character's name is, but if you've seen Office Space, you'll know who I mean. If more recently, Lewis Litt in Suits, who just wanders around looking important. And let's be honest, these people aren't universally liked. So loud laborers might sound like a new fancy term, but it has been around for a while. Another one that's all over TikTok is a term called productivity theater. It describes anyone who'd rather look busy than actually do meaningful work. So whether it's replying to emails all day or DMs or purposefully staying late, even though they're not actually achieving anything meaningful, these are the people who want to be seen to be working hard. So is this a new thing? Well, of course not. In every office in the 80s, there was always some idiot who'd walk around all day with an arm full of files. This is back before email, so you just take files from office to office just so people could see he or she was important. If you've ever travelled on a train in the UK, I don't know about other countries, but certainly in the UK, you'll have met this person too. Generally, they sit on a table, open their laptop, type briefly, then make a very loud phone call starting with, "I'm on a train," to signify to both the people listening and the person at the end of the call that they're busy and important. There are a few more of these articles. The link to the full articles in the show notes if you're interested.
I like it. It reminds me of that Dom Jolly sketch. Hello? No, I'm on the train.
My favourite was when he's at a play and he got the phone call and then he just went, "I'm at a play." No, not really.
Should we get Dom on the show? Hey, Dom, you've got a podcast. Not really.
Anyway, so that is the end of the news roundup. Last week, we had the gracious and loquacious John Smith. By the way, I've just come up with that term and I'm enjoying it. That's what we're getting on a t-shirt. We had John Smith on the pod, who's done everything in the world, including bringing Northern Soul and American football to the UK, managed superstars like Diego Maradona, and still managed to find time to IPO his company and launch a number one hit in the UK charts. Here's John talking about the time when he negotiated with a Russian guy called Putin.
We eventually got the deal done with, I said story in the book, it was the last day of the transfer window, and we got the deal done with 4 seconds left on the clock. But it was a real experience coming across a complete and utter brick wall, because I had nothing I could give him that he didn't have. And sometimes you just have to go, oh, fuck it. You know what? It is what it is. Let's get the deal done and we'll make it up somewhere else.
So head back to last week's episode, which is episode 91, to hear the full interview.
After this short break, join us for the weekly workplace surgery, where I will be answering your workplace questions. See you in a sec. I am quickly interrupting this phenomenal podcast to recommend another phenomenal podcast, Nudge. We love Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, a true gent. It is, of course, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. But that is not the only reason we're recommending it, is it, Al?
No, it's not. No, we've recommended it to lots of people. In fact, if you look at any of our YouTube comments, it won't take you long, there's about 20 of them, then you'll see that we recommend Phil to anyone who likes our pod. Well, on Nudge, you're going to learn simple evidence-backed tips. It's going to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, and grow a business. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest growing business podcast.
For now.
For now, Phil, we're coming for you, buddy.
If you loved hearing Rory Sutherland from Ogilvy on our show back in episode 83, then Phil's latest episode has Rory on again, talking about McDonald's, smoking, and why the pension system is broken.
I suppose we should say that actually Rory's been on a couple of times onto Nudge. It's not that Phil's seen what we've done and gone, I'll have Rory. So I think it's important
for us
to say
that. We copied Phil. Anyway, listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's kick off this weekly workplace surgery with the first question. By the way, if you've got a question you'd like me to put to Leanne about the workplace, check out the show notes for our email address. It can be anonymous or it can be anonymous. Is that the opposite of anonymous? It could be...
It
could be anonymous. Yeah, so let us know if you've got a question. Oh, by the way, Leanne doesn't see these beforehand.
No.
So we literally... when I'm editing this, I sometimes have to cut out quite long breaks where she's thinking about something. So here is the question. I've grown my company to 14 employees and I've seen a bit of a change. When we were back about 8 or 9 people, we were scrappy. And we used to share like pizza and food and beer on a Friday afternoon, and all kinds of great ideas came from these informal meetings. But now we're bigger, the feedback I'm getting is that these, what now people are calling Pizza Fridays, are lame. And also worse, it's an excuse not to pay anyone any more money. I'm genuinely shocked by this and a little bit sad, because this was never meant to be about throwing a few dollars at a few pizzas in lieu of giving someone a pay rise. This is about getting everyone together to swap ideas and have a bit of a moan if required. But also, everyone knows the business is still young. We're not making huge amounts of money. So increasing salaries is not an option right now. I feel like I might have messed it all up. What have I done wrong? What do I do next?
You haven't messed it up. This is fine. We can work with this. Nothing awful has happened. You're okay. I think this kind of reminds me of, you know, when you start watching one of those films where there's usually some kind of obnoxious early teen girl, and the mum's like, I don't understand. You used to love going shopping with me. You used to love it when I brushed your hair. It's kind of the same. I think it's like your business has matured to a point where those early startup things no longer work, or your people have matured, or the new people you've brought in have a different view on those things. You're an entrepreneur. You know what worked yesterday ain't going to work today and definitely won't work tomorrow. So you've got to kind of roll with it and innovate a bit. And this is where you'll be easy because that's what you do. You've started a business. This is what you do. First question I would say, reflect on, what's the purpose of said meetings, pizza parties? Is it to bond? Is it to ideate? Is it to problem solve? What's the purpose of that? And try and find other ways, probably more than likely within the working day, to achieve that same outcome. If you're in a position where you can't afford to pay people more salaries, people will understand that, but they're going to be less tolerant of being paid a lower salary and be expected to stay late after work to eat pizza with you. Like, you can't kind of have it both ways. And particularly as a business grows, you're no longer the scrappy startup. Now you're kind of getting to 14 people. You're a small established business. So that... you're not as forgiven for those types of things. So I think, what is the purpose? What are you trying to get out of it? Look at other ways to do it. If you want to still have pizza, do a working lunch instead, or, you know, one of something like that. I guess it depends on what it is you're trying to do. If it's around team building, if it's around relationship building, if it's around ideation, and ask your team. say to them, you know, okay, I get it. Pizza Friday is now lame. My bad. The whole reason I want to do this is to build relationships, to be creative, to problem solve. How do you think we should best do that? And get their feedback, what they're on board for. It might be a team away day. It might just be pizza at lunch instead of after work, or they might have a completely different idea. I think the thing is, as you grow, you need to be more intentional as a leader. You can't have these haphazard interactions just because people are excited to be around an engaging, vibrant entrepreneur who is in the early stage of startup. That is an exciting time. You're not there anymore. So you are unfortunately going to have to work a bit harder to engage your people, but that is well within your gift to do so.
Great answer. And also, who knew? Ask them what they want.
I know, who knew?
Isn't it funny how people who are experienced in running businesses and dealing with customers and solving customers' problems and basically building something in the marketplace once forgets that their employees are a marketplace too, and they want something. And to make them happy, just give them what they want. Okay, fabulous. Are you ready for question number two,
Lynn? Yes.
Okay, now this one is definitely anonymous. And you will see why. Because
what did you do?
I didn't do anything. This wasn't me. But even if this person had put their name on it, I would not be reading their name out. An employee has told me that they've recently been diagnosed with autism. They've always been a tough person to manage, and it feels like they're looking for ways to avoid doing the work. In my opinion, this just seems yet another way to make their work life easier and make them feel special in the workplace. Am I being unfair?
Well, yes, you are being unfair. Do you want me to elaborate?
Yeah, please. Yeah,
I mean, if they have an official diagnosis, then that is the root cause of everything that you have been experiencing as their manager. That is the reason, the underlying reason behind the behaviors that they have in the workplace, behind some of the challenges they have in terms of organizing themselves or building relationships. So it's not an excuse, it's a diagnosis. If someone got diagnosed with cancer, you'd probably have a bit more empathy towards that individual in the situation, right? It's obviously a different manageable conditions, but essentially it's the same. It's a shock to the person. They've been given a diagnosis that perhaps they weren't expecting. In this situation, educate yourself. Find out about autism, read about it, understand what it means. It probably doesn't mean what you think it means. Go back to our episode, Neurodiversity 101. That'll dive into exactly what neurodiversity is, why actually you have a potential incredibly effective, productive, phenomenally talented employee within your business. And now that you know how their mind works, you can leverage that. So go back and listen to that. Look for an organization called Genius Within. That is a UK-based organization that works with businesses to support the neurodiverse within the organization and maximize performance in that sense whilst making it a safe and effective place for the individual. And if you're really struggling, I think ACAS have some support around this in terms of the reasonable adjustments that you do legally have to implement to support this person in your business. Neurodiversity is a funny one. It is not automatically classed as a disability, but if a person identifies it themselves as a disability, you need to treat it as a disability. So you are being unfair and potentially breaking the law if you're not very careful. So I would say educate yourself, check out Genius Within and ACAS, contact them and figure out what your legal obligations are with this new information that you have.
And if you want to understand a bit more about this, just go back to episode 41, which is what Leanne was talking about there, the Neurodiversity 101. Professor Nanta Doyle is our guest on there, along with another woman called Jan Stewart. Both experts in slightly different ways. Nanta Doyle has an amazing way of explaining how someone who is neurodiverse thinks and how it is different to someone who is neurotypical. You sound like you might be neurotypical, and you might find that this is actually a huge benefit because you might find that there's a particular part of your work that this person will excel at. So definitely go back to listen to that. That's episode 41. Lee, that was a fabulous answer right on the fly. Are you ready for our final question?
Yes.
This person writes, our organization uses a couple of outside contractors when we need them, usually about once or twice a month. These contractors work remotely and so far seem happy enough, but I feel like I should be trying to include them more in the in-office and the rest of the members of the staff. How do I do this the right way? And then I've got a PS here. These contractors get paid twice as much as the full-time employees because they only work on a contract basis. So I'm guessing they don't get paid twice as much in total. It's just for the actual hours. It's a twice as much in the hourly rate. I do worry that if it became public knowledge, it could cause problems. So it sounds like a twofold for a twofer there, Leah.
A twofer. This is a tricky one. And I've seen organisations do it in very different ways. I've seen organisations who actually employ 100% contractors and build a culture around that, which is tricky but can be done. I've seen organisations that have offshore contractors working and have integrated them very closely within the business, and that can work very well. I've also seen it where these types of problems can occur because people are take the face value of an hourly rate. Of course, you pay your contractors more because they're not getting the same benefits that your people inside the business are getting. I think I would start again with, just because, do you know what I think it is a lot of the time, Al? Is that there's just some lovely people out there who just think that it just feels intuitively right that I want to bring these people who work hard for me into my business. Why? Because it feels nice, or because you need to build a certain type of relationship between your contractors and your staff to get a job done, to make a project more effective, to make operations more efficient? What is the reason for wanting to bring in these people closer into your culture? Also, you might need to ask the question to the contractors if they want to be brought into your culture. Some people set up their own independent practices as freelancers because they've been burnt by organizational culture in the past and they might not want to jump in as quickly again. So I think the question is why? What is the business case for bringing people into your business? Secondly, then it's going to be how you manage that. And that is going to require probably a transparent conversation. The thing is, if you're worried that your people are going to react to the salary difference, you're better telling them first and explaining why that is so different. And then go from there, really. But I think I would be more inclined to look at the role that your contractors play within the business and in terms of that mission delivery. They play a very distinct role. For example, I worked on a welfare to work contractor. We had permanent members of staff who were the coaches and administrative staff and compliance. And we had freelance tutors because they required specialist skills to deliver specialist courses to individuals with highly specialized needs. So that made sense for us because it wasn't a full-time job, although at times of peak kind of peak busyness it could be, but not for very long. So it makes sense in that situation that you have a contractor. So I think about operationally, and if it makes sense operationally to bring this person into your business, one, should that person actually be a full-time member of staff? Of course, there's financial considerations to that. Or two, why are you bringing it into the culture? Because ultimately, what are you going to do by bringing out what essentially are outsiders in is disrupt your culture and change your team dynamic. And that will take time. You know, the norming, storming, performing curve of teams, that's going to happen. So you will go through a storming and potentially dip in productivity and performance first. So it's not something to be done lightly, and it's not something to be done just because you think that'll make you a nice guy or gal. What's the business case for it? Because contractors in roles work very effectively and are more than happy being more distanced from the day-to-day politics and culture of an organisation. I feel like I'm rambling out, but do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do, and I think particularly what you said about they might not even want to be part of the culture. And that's something that's weird, because I know that you and I have done contract work in the past. I've no real interest in, you know, being part of someone's culture. I'm happy just to dip in, do my work and dip out. Absolutely fine.
So. And let's be honest, if you're a contractor, you get exposed to lots of different leaders and lots of different cultures. And there are some you'd really rather not.
Mm.
I appreciate the work. I enjoy the transaction. You stay there. I'll stay here.
Absolutely.
I don't want to get involved in that.
Yeah. So don't make assumptions. Same as all these three questions can be summed up by don't make assumptions. I think that's probably what it comes down to, is just don't assume that you know best. Maybe ask people what they want. Ask people how you can help.
And I think as well, we can maybe sometimes we're a bit guilty of, because we talk about culture so much and management so much and creating belonging so much, that perhaps business leaders are thinking that that's unfair to contractors to not bring them into that fold. And I think the starting point for whether you should do that is operationally, what's that role within the business and how is it best functioning within the business? If it's a contracted role, then it's a contracted role. You treat them well And you might want to invite them to the Christmas do when it comes around, or if you have a team building day, you might want to include them if there's a case for it. But I think start with the business side of it. Does that role need to be an internal role? If it does, then yeah, then it's worth diving into the complications of bringing that either in-house or aligning that person closer. But otherwise, I'm not sure there's a need, you know?
Excellent. Okay, well, that is all for this week. If you like this, then make sure you subscribe, as every Tuesday we do an episode just like this. As I said before, on Thursday, we bring you an in-depth interview with world-class experts. Now, just to give you an idea, we've had people from Microsoft, HSBC, Metrobank, Jaguar Land Rover, even the BBC. We've had experts like Professor Sir Kerry Cooper, Professor John Amici, authors Bruce Daisley, Martin Lindstrom, and hundreds of other experts and founders with stories to tell. So if you just can't wait until Thursday, then you've got plenty of other episodes, about 90 in the back catalogue, which you can get stuck into. Lee, anything to add before we go?
No.
Cool. Well, that makes things easy. We'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Warp. Did it where that noise was?